Anyway, welcome to, I guess it's the ninth week of the program. And it's been kind of organized a little bit thematically, and it seems as though the more formal, well, not entirely, but we just finished kind of favorability, and now we're largely starting with a focus on flux vacua. And also, sort of simultaneously, I guess we have topological field theory, topological string theory kind of penciled in. Well, in 2 weeks, we have this week of conference run by Dave Morris and Edward Frankel. So anyway, it's been a great program so far based on, I think, just a sense of a high level of activity. It's not great having talks every single day, but the fact is that the great majority of them are very interesting. A lot of, you know, I just have learned something from almost every talk, and I hope that this, again, even though having talks every day isn't great, I just, you know, hope at least the high level of interest and you know, sense of new ideas continues. There are a lot of new faces here. Actually, let me get some speed. James, are you looking for me to put on the microphone? Is that why you're
here?
It's just a discussion. It's just an organizational meeting. There's no,
okay.
No, we aren't going to take
this.
Anyway, we should go around and introduce ourselves because a lot of new faces here. And then Melanie was going to lead the discussion of the physics, what we might want to talk about in the next few weeks. So anyway, I'm Joe Polchinski, and I'm from the KITT.
I'm Melanie Becker from Texas A&M.
Dave Morrison from UCSB.
Veronica Hubeli from Durham.
Aaron Bergman from A&M.
Mukund Nagamani from Durham.
Rob Mann, University of Waterloo.
Daniel Robbins from the University of Texas, Austin.
Andy Metzke from Harvard.
Sean Downs from Texas A&M.
Nikolai Bolik, USC.
Corinne Goldball, yeah.
Lori Nizuka from here.
Martin Schnabel, Prague.
Ruben Minasian, Paris.
We've sort of fallen into a pattern of having two kinds of talks, both talks largely on the blackboard, which I think has been very good. I mean, it encourages questions, and if you're going to sit through a lot of talks, it's easier, I think, to sit through a lot of blackboard talks than to sit through a lot of PowerPoints. But there seem to be sort of fixed point of 60-minute research talks and 90-minute pedagogical talks with some, you know, and it's pretty clear which category each talk is falling into. But you know, if you're going to be a speaker, we should discuss, you know, what would be appropriate. There's another formats. For a while, we were having informal discussions in the morning that would involve only a fraction of the people on more technical subjects. So, you know, if you want to give a talk, if you want to hear a talk, if you want to make a small group and schedule something, get a room, you know, there's lots of flexibility in the format. So, I think the idea was we would since we're going to physics.
So what I've done is I went through our directory list and looked at people that we have right now here. Many experts on many, many topics. So what I have done is a list of topics that I think we can have talks or lectures on that I would like to present to you. And in case if I'm missing something, I would like to make notes for suggestions, the topics we can discuss. So what I've first seen is, so I went through it in alphabetical order. And what I've first seen is a group of people working in unified theories. the aim to obtain some advantage groups in the context of flex competitions. So I think what we do have is several approaches. First, my favorite approach is periodic flexes, but I can say a couple of words about. Then I've seen people working in the six prime models, so intersecting different models. We have a bunch of people working in type 2B oriented fault models and gap groups. And some experts with F3D guts. So that's so far what I've seen people trying to reproduce in standard model gauge groups or grand unified theories. So what we would like probably to do is to have talks on all of these different types of topics and to contrast. So what are the advantages of one approach? What are the disadvantages? So I can tell you, and what I would like to do is now is to have each of you, so the experts on each of those fields, say a few words. So where does it stand? What are the difficulties? What are the challenges of particular approaches? So what I can do is I can tell you a few words on periodic fluxes. So let me start maybe. So working with fluxes in periodic theory has got some advantages and some clear disadvantages. So let me, difficulties. So what we know in periodic theory, we know that so we have some advantages. So what we know is in periodic theory. So one thing that is very simple about periodic theory is that we do have just one type of flux. So we don't need to deal with many different types of fluxes of two different types, Ramond-Ramond fluxes. So that's one of the advantages, which makes this theory technically easier.
Well, you have gauge and H flux. Which one are you calling the one?
You're right.
So that's one of the
disadvantages.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
That's the trouble. So we do have one type of flux, which is the H flux, which makes our life easier. Number two, the dilaton is not stabilized, so that you can have, so dilaton is not stabilized. So we don't run into the trouble that many type 2 theories have. So in type 2 theories, what we know is many times the dilaton is stabilized at strong couplings, so many of the black holes are. In the literature, in type 2 theories are strong coupling white one. So what do you do about this? Either you understand the dual conformality theory, or you go to the hydraulic theory where you know the dilaton is a free parameter. So that's one of the advantages of working in the hydraulic theory. What else? So in the hydraulic theory, we don't need sources in order to have non-trivial flux compactifications because we do have the periodic Young energy, so we don't need sources. Because if we do have the periodic Young energy, which is this, what we know is that when we don't affect the spin connection to the gauge group, what we see is we can get non-trivial fluxes just taking this Bianchi entity into account without even having to take sources, as is the case in most type 2 theories, which is kind of one of the advantages. So disadvantages, or at least one of the uses additional complications, is that in the hydraulic theory, once internal fluxes, your manifolds are one-tailored, which means that there is an emission form that is not closed, so manifolds are not tailored. Which doesn't have to be a disadvantage. It's exciting at the same time because the math of non-Kerr manifolds with torsion hasn't been developed. So many of the things that we know for Cavalier manifolds has to be revisited in the context of periodic of non-Kerr manifolds. So, but some aspects of this long-term manifolds have been understood. So let me maybe continue here. So some aspects have been understood. Some examples of such manifolds have been constructed. So the most prominent examples are the 2 over K3 and Barbie folds now. What else do we understand? So some properties of this manifold, of these compact equations, very similarly, as we know, that happens in the context of type 2 theories. We know that in the hydraulic theory, there is a superpotential that is generated, which is expressed in terms of the H flux and J, so which is very reminiscent of what we know for the superpotential that we will have in type 2 theories. So what else do we know? So some of the supersymmetric moduli deformations of such manifolds have been understood. So let me this way. However, one of the great disadvantages, of the Mont-Carré manifolds with torsion is that we know so few examples of them. So it's like in the case of Calabi-Yau manifolds at the beginning, not many Calabi-Yau manifolds were known, but now we know zillions of Calabi-Yau manifolds. So constructing new examples and understanding properties of Calabi-Yau of compactifications, Mont-Carré compactifications with torsion is one of the kind of goals for the future. And I guess what I would like to do is to pass the ball to Catherine, who has been recently working on hydraulic flux compactifications. So maybe you can just summarize a little bit about new developments in fluxes.
Well, I mean, I can say a little bit, I can say a few words on that. So I got something like a 1 hour notice for this. So the best, so what I can do is simply to say, so this is supposed to be a discussion, right? So then maybe what I can do is to summarize a little bit the things I'm thinking about the form of this 1 hour notice. And maybe what I can do is to list, I mean, what's actually what I do? You would like to get an overview first
of
all?
Get an overview, a little bit of an overview of any examples.
Well, I mean, so okay, the question, okay, then let me simply start with raising a question or maybe a puzzle or a list of puzzles. Right, and the first question I would like to ask is, the landscape, so that's a topic for discussion, right? So, but, and there are many discussions at many conferences, but the question I would like to ask is, is there a landscape for compactification of hydraulic strings in the presence of flux? Is there a landscape of hydraulic string compactifications? Let's say four dimensions and the presence of flux. Oh, eight chances. Right? So we are all familiar with many examples in the context of type 2 compactifications, right? We, for example, take type 2, type 2b, or type 2a. We compactify to four dimensions on a torus or on a Calabi-Yau space. We have all possible cycles in the space, so possible three cycles. And we, to each Calabi-Yau space, there are, for example, zillions of corresponding flux compactifications. So it's not just one additional one, but there are many more. Now, so the question I would like to ask is there also such a big class of examples for compactifications of hydraulic strings? I mean, it's natural to expect that. So personally, I think the answer to this is going to be yes, but since, again, this is a discussion, so I would like to ask the audience for any comments.
Do you consider B-fit also as a flux?
Yeah, well, I mean, so at this moment, it's really something where H is going to be, H ns is going to be equal to dB, right? But then there is a chance Simon's part. So that can be gauge and,
it can be gauge or it can be Gartner Schaffer. So if it is counted as flux, then the other is yes.
So, do you expect the degeneracy to be as large as, for example, on the type 2 side?
For example, on the asymmetric overflows, how
about Calabi-Yau spaces, for example? So, you know, you have Calabi-Yau spaces, right? So, do you think the numbers are going to be comparable, or are they going to be? What is the generic description of this? So, So that is something, okay. So first of all, the first question is how many of these are there? And the second is, so what is the phenomenology of these? What is the phenomenology? Of, let me call this generic flux compactification. So, for example, one question I would like to raise, can we, for example, just to be provocative, is it possible to consider generic, which means also H and S, is it possible, for example, to break EA directly down to the standard model without using Wilson lines if we, for example, consider spaces with H and S? S3 times S2 times 1, right? For example, that's a question I would have to raise. So it is, for example, possible in the case that we consider a background in which we have H and S. Yes? No? Just laughing.
I just haven't worked in the heteroid chain about 15 years, so I have to remember
right.
How it works.
So maybe it's time to
catch up.
Maybe it's time to catch up. So here, for example, a few reasons to try to catch up. So if you, for example, consider flux compactifications of type 2 strings again, so we know the dilaton is going to be stabilized, right? So if you say GS is, for example, going to be of order 1, so how are we ever going to compute quantum corrections to this, right? So we don't have a worksheet description where we say we add, for example, about a genus of some Riemann surface, right? And we do some perturbative expansion. So that's something that is very hard to do on the type 2B side. So if we say actually dilaton is stabilized. So can we ever go beyond supergravity plus a few quantum corrections in flux compactifications for type 2 strings? Right, so on the eukaryotic side, the string coupling constant is a free parameter. We can tune it, right? So we can hope to have a perturbative description. But in our background, we find we get a leading oral solution, and we can hope to be able to find maybe a framework where we can compute quantum corrections. So that is sort of a little bit of a strategy of constructing flux compactifications for heterotic strings.
Can you just tell me, can you kind of try to speak? Because I do have many, many topics, so.
Okay.
Okay, so let me then go for the next. So what I would like to do the next is go through given model building. So I was thinking maybe Gabriele would like to say a little bit about the six brain models and the secondary six brain models. So which is another way how in the literature we can construct a model. Let me just start. So for the six brain models, the starting point is that you take the six brains on three cycles. And if you want to preserve SUBY, you need to wrap them
so-called special abandon three cycles. And that's where the first obstacle arises, because we know a lot about holomorphicity, but we don't know so much about special abandon three cycles. That's why most of the work has focused on toroidal ovipods. There has last week there was one paper by Iran Falchi, is working in Cambridge, where he has started to work out special Lagrangian cycles for Kalawayau manifolds, which come from projective spaces. But that's the first attempt, besides from one paper, which is a few years old, was a quintic manifold. And there are still lots of open issues, like in his case, he cannot really fulfill the tadpole cancellation conditions because there are some data missing for it. And there's also no way to compute the non-chiral spectrum. Lots of computational techniques are missing. So I've worked in these toroidal orbifolds mainly. And mainly with Florian Meiner in the recent years. And we have tried to get standard model-like spectra or gut spectra out of it. And while the orbifolds are, of course, very constrained on, so we don't get exactly the standard model and nothing else out, but usually we get additional matter. But on the other hand, the orbifolds are the only things where we really can do computations so far.
How many nodes do
you have? I forgot the number, but in this estimate with Timo Weigand and Dieter Lust also, we had estimated for the Z2 times Z2 that there should be something like 1 billion, but the problem was that the Z2 times Z2 doesn't have a billion models, but it's less. So we made some estimate from demanding SU3 times SU2 times a hypercharge and 3 quark lepton generations. And so we made estimates for each of these things and multiplied them, and then came out that we have only 10 to the 8 models. So like 1/10 of the models would have standard model-like feature. That was for Z2 times Z2. Then with Florian, I have looked at Z6 prime recently, and there are many, many more models, but it looks like many of them have the same features. So it's not clear if they are really totally independent models or if there are some kind of maps between different models. So the configurations, of course, we couldn't compute like 10 to the 23 models. That's what the computer did for us. So we see many common features that there are. If you look at the chiral spectrum, there's only a very limited set of different chiral spectra. But so far, we have not computed the full one chiral spectrum. We know how to do it, but of course, the computer time is limited. So for 10 to the 23 models, you cannot go through it. And the gauge group and the chiral spectrum is always rather easy to compute. On these orbifolds, we also know how to compute the non-chiral spectrum. Then for the gauge couplings, the tree level value is still rather easy to compute because it's related to the length of a three cycle where the brain is wrapped on. But right now we're computing the threshold corrections for our models because these D-brain models have the disadvantage compared to the heterotic models that you do not automatically gauge coupling. You don't get it. Gauge coupling unification. So potentially the thresholds could remedy this. We have computed the threshold for a few cases, and we get, like, depending usually on the compactification volume, there can be something like a value of 150 or so for a gauge threshold. So that's not a small value, and it of course can go into the wrong direction, so it can mess up the unification completely. But that's something we're still working on. And then also, since this workshop is on flux compactifications, we don't have any closed string fluxes in these models, because the problem is that once you have closed string fluxes, you're away from the Kalawiyau space. And there have been a few simple models where you have, if you start from the torus, you get torsional cycles. So the thing is, you cannot just impose closed string fluxes to
to freeze moduli, but the whole background geometry changes, and then it's not clear if the spectrum is derived in the same way, so there's not been much work on that. So in all of these cases, there are some moduli are frozen by supersymmetry, for example, but usually the Keller moduli are not fixed at all in these models.
This will have some interesting challenges. Yeah. All right. So unfortunately, we need to go.
Actually,
maybe it's really useful if for every of these model building techniques, we could sort of summarize how far have you actually gotten to build a realistic model. What, like, can you, for example, from head on get something like a model?
Get what?
Like a really realistic theory, like a, I think that the pendant group has.
Well, yeah, but they again, well, realistic, I call it very well, so that people in
yeah,
the
pendulum
have kind of
Yaw
spaces.
Right?
So in the pendulum, they have kind of Yaw spaces, so I mean, they don't really that they do have this whole bunch of moduli running around. So, and if you, on the other hand, you put torsion on this one, because then you need to rethink how do I do the computation, so how do you determine the willingness of the central force? Because you're no longer embedding spin connection into gauge connection, so that you can say, okay, the number of generations is given by geometry. So you need to rethink everything, so how those boundary constructions work, which is one of the things that was on my list of things to do. So.
What is the status of open string moduli and intersecting brain models? I mean, are these on rigid cycles, or can brains can move?
No, the thing is that the rigid cycles are computationally much more involved. Simply, by hand, it's really, you can't really guess a good model, so you would have to write a computer program. So far, there has been only a systematic search for the Z2 times Z2 case resolution. And in this case, I have not seen any fully globally consistent model which has realistic features, many unknown. There's some kind of local models which people use as toy models when they do some calculations, but I haven't seen any fully consistent one. So the models I've been looking at with Florian and Minor have fractional cycles, which still have one modulus. Which is a Wilson line modulus and one which is a displacement. So they are not fully fixed. In general, these models have some joint matter, which so far we have not discussed on how to get rid of it, because the problem with all this is that we can make guesses on the field theory based on charges also, but it's not, so far there have been some computations for just the torus on how to really do the cover couplings also, but for the fractional cases, there's still this input is missing, so we cannot basically write on the
background.
What is a fractional
case? Sorry?
A fractional brain is I have a torus cycle, but I've also set two fixed points, and the torus cycle goes through the two fixed points, and then I have something like 1/2 times the torus cycle plus 1/2 times exceptional cycles. And since the brain is stuck at the exceptional cycles, some of the Wilson lines are frozen, for example. But not all, that's the point.
Okay, thank you. So can I ask maybe Thomas or Timo to say a few words on type 2, type 2B theories?
So I'm not prepared at all. So,
sorry.
I didn't get too much of notice of this. But so let me. I think what I like very much is like the idea of stating basically what are the disadvantages and the advantages,
right.
Because this raises the questions, and then I think we will not be able to answer any questions in any detail here anyway. So let me also make this list. And first of all, so we heard that in the heterotic string, the dilaton is not stabilized, and it was apparently an advantage. I would say that one of the advantages of these type 2B models, or let's say type 2 models, is the fact that we actually understand to some extent how moduli stabilization works, including the dilaton.
But then you have the size, right?
Well, they don't have the size, and
then
least in type 2B and type 2A, you could argue that you have the fluxes distributed in a nicer way, such that you have both moduli touched by fluxes. This is correct. But if you would go away from the Kanabiao case anyway, like in the heterotic case, you would also induce a superpotential for the size.
Well, that's okay. I mean, it's sort of interchange, right? So while on the type 2 side, you have the dilaton, right, that's going to be stabilized, let's say type 2B, and then the size is going to be arbitrary, right? So it's sort of interchange on the heterotic side. So while you need some number derivative effects to stabilize the size on the type 2B side, you may have some number derivative effects to stabilize the dilaton, right? So the point was mainly that if you have a dilaton that is small, you can sum up a worksheet over the genus order, and then you can maybe find a worksheet description. Otherwise, you don't know if this is going to be a quantum theory at all, right?
And this was not meant as a critics against anyone saying something, but it's, I mean, I think this is one of the advantages which is also nice to bring in these models. I mean, the
but it's sort of, I mean, it's on the theoretic side, it's actually not completely different. So there's a large class of models where you can take type 2B, for example, compactify on some space kind of the outspace, or maybe let's do it just for K3 times T2. You turn on flux and you can stabilize the moduli on the type 2B side. And you can actually understand this in a similar way on the heterotic side. So you call it moduli stabilization on the type 2B side. On the heterotic side, it's more some kind of topology change, but that also makes some of the moduli disappear.
Absolutely. I think the point is, somehow we believe that these theories are dual in a certain sense anyway. The key is that in some descriptions, certain effects might be simpler to understand than in other pictures.
Right.
And I believe that, for example, that so to say, Calabial compactifications with fluxes, warped Calabial compactifications with fluxes are, so to say, best addressed in this type 2 settings, because there it's closest to be like a full solution. Okay, so but let's move on. I mean, that's what I would call an advantage. The disadvantage of the thing is, which I already just mentioned, what I already mentioned is basically the effect of warping. And well, like with many of these things, it's very hard to put them in one of the two sides, because of course the warping has been like the key to understand many important things. But on the other hand, it's very hard to understand effective theories in the presence of warp. Okay. So, but now let's move on towards the model building issues.
Warping may also be the key to some dual gauge theories.
Exactly. Yeah. So.
I mean, if you don't include warping, you might not find the dual gauge theory.
Exactly. I mean, so these strongly warped curves, they are useful. They are very interesting from an AES CFT point of view. That's true, but they also pose enormous problems if you want to think about like compactifications, because things drastically change. Notion of light modes change. Notions of like decoupling or four-dimensional internal fields change. Okay, but we wanted to go towards the model building. So in the model building, as I just said, we are very close to the Calabial case. And there are many Calabials. And so the thing which we looked at recently in a paper with Ralf Blumhagen, with Team O'Weigand and Volker Braun, is that Well, let's try to make some progress in building models on compact Calabi-Yau Oriental faults, which we constructed using toric geometry, and where the models are basically from intersecting seven branches on the Petzo surface. Okay. So what we had to understand is how to deal with the Petzo surfaces, or how to understand these compact geometries using methods known from toric geometry. And so the advantages I would say is that rich set of models which we can compute, and especially because there are so many toric Calabi-Yaus hypersurfaces in toric spaces, and these can be analyzed in great details, and especially since we are going to F theory, especially one has good control on the Petzo surfaces, their geometry, and how they arise in these compact spaces. Okay. And let me mention a last point, which is a more formal point, is that there's vast progress in understanding non-perturbative corrections to these scenarios. Okay. So there has been a lot of work in understanding what kind of couplings can be generated by instantons under which conditions. And the other thing which I'm working on is basically how to compute superpotential corrections from open strings using like extended sets of Picker-Fuchs equations. So basically, again, this basically comes down to the fact that we have a very clear understanding what are the compact geometries, and we have an understanding of what are the brains in these compact geometries. Okay. So this is an advantage computations of corrections. And disadvantages, of course, in order to prepare for the F theory story is basically that very simple arguments already show that one gets problems in this perturbative approach to type 2 to gut models, so to say, to wave theories, because certain things you cannot have there simply from geometry. I mean, you know that, for example, you can never have two intersecting orientifold planes, right? So they cannot touch. Like two or seven planes cannot touch in such a model. And this means that certain couplings will not be generated, right? Or certain representations will not be induced. So exceptional groups are not present in these examples. So this, you could immediately say, that's an advantage of heterotic model building, right? You start right away with E8, right? And there's not like a surge of intersecting models. And, so exceptional groups are not accessible here, but this is something which works. The reason for this is because we work at weak coupling. Doesn't mean that they are there in type 2B string theory, but they are not there in this small GS approach. Okay, and no exception in group, and this means, for example, there are also certain couplings are missing, which we would like to have for gut theory, like this 10 and 5 couplings. So,
perturbative
couplings of this type are missing, but that doesn't mean that they are not there at all. It just means that we have to think harder to to get control of them.
I mean, so, I mean, you can also get exceptional groups from brain wrapping singularities, right? I mean, 2A, I mean, are you counting that as non-perturbative or just?
Well, this is a non-perturbative state. I mean, it's like, that's true.
I mean, this has been all these 10 years or whatever, but somehow, more recently, this is a theory set up, like, somehow it was put in a way as if it would be something new to get exceptions out of events. Type 2A and phase 3, for example,
it's clear to have things. So whenever you have, like, shrinking cycles and things can enhance, and they're naturally exceptional groups arise, but of course, this is a one has to put it into this framework which I was using here, and here was saying moduli stabilization is understood, and these kind of things, they are usually understood in certain regimes again, and in these regimes these other things are not necessarily considered yet. Maybe that's the fairest thing to say. Okay, so that's basically.
So my next item on the list is F3 guts, and we do have a talk tomorrow. It's a classic giving a talk on F3 guts, so I wonder whether you'd like to kind of say a couple of words on.
Well, I think you can basically just switch A and D.
Okay, so I guess we're gonna hear the details tomorrow.
Okay. I think that's basically all there is to say anymore, I'll say tomorrow.
Good. All right.
But also the board thing?
No, I mean, apart from the global thing.
Should there be a star with a G2 next to it, or no? Should there be a star with G2 next to it on the left, or no?
Star with G2?
G2. Yeah.
G2
compact.
You want to speak
about
G2? I know nothing about them. I'm going to get that.
So next item on the list, I found deep brain syndrome corrections. So Timo has done a kind of large review, and there was a large conference in Germany in Munich about instant on corrections and the presence of fluxes. What can we do with, so what can we calculate? Multiple instantons, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we have a great review article on this. So I wonder whether you'd like to say a couple of words on this.
Yeah.
So what is what we can calculate? So what are the timers, et cetera, et cetera.
So deep brain instantons are of course not at all new in string computations at all, but they have been around also for over 10 years and have been used for example extensively of course in the context say in object to be oriented forms in KBLT like approaches to stabilize the Keller moduli. So In that community, it has always been well appreciated that Euclidean D-brains, which wrap cycles and which are point-like, point-like in four extended dimensions, contribute non-perturbatively to the superpotential. It has also been known since 1995 that such D-brain instantons can basically be the string theoretic description of gauge instantons. So if one has a theory of D-brains and a Euclidean brain wrapping the same internal cycle as the D-brain, then this Euclidean brain is the string theoretic realization of the ADHM construction, for example. This has also been known for a while. But what was appreciated only, say, 3 years ago or so, such instantons can also induce couplings which would be absent perturbatively in type 2. This has to do with what Thomas just said. For one example, for example, this 10-10-5 coupling. Basically, in type 2 oriented folds, both in type 2A and in type 2B, but also in F theory, of course, we have certain selection rules, perturbative selection rules, which constrain the perturbative couplings. And these selection rules, basically axonic shift symmetries, can be broken by non-perturbative effects because they are only perturbative selection rules. So from the phenomenological point of view, there has been some activity in the past years about exploiting this effect and generating terms which were traditionally considered forbidden in type 2 constructions. One example is the 10-10-5, other examples
originally Majorana masses, etc. So this is one application, so to speak, and further development of incident calculus in the coupling story. Another field of interest, more on the slightly more formal side, was to classify which instantons can contribute to superpotentials, to F terms, to corrections of the gauge kinetic function. This was not so totally clear by then, and has been classified more systematically. For example, it was appreciated that in type 2, as opposed to hydraulic or amplitude convexifications, it is much more challenging to make an instanton or to find an instanton which can really contribute to superpotential. Generically, BPS instantons will contribute to higher derivative terms, and it is only in the presence of fluxes, so to speak, that these will then be transformed into superpotential. So these were, from my point of view, the two developments, so to speak. On the one hand, again, phenological applications of effects that had been overlooked, mm-hmm. and on the other hand, progress, technical progress as to classifying instantons, which are relevant also then in the process of modular stabilization.
So in the question of, I guess we have examples of KQLT where you know the radius is stabilized, but I mean, does this enlarge a class of models in which you can stabilize the Taylor moduli?
If there exists a larger class?
Yeah, they're now known as the larger class because you have now more. Sometimes
they
give you
I would put it the other way around. The class has shrunk. In particular, one has appreciated that there is generic tension, and this I think is really a big problem in modeling and in KKLT. And there is tension between chirality on D-brains on the one hand side and stabilization of modular instantons on the other. Usually, it is, or oftentimes in local approaches to model building, it is assumed that you can basically solve these two areas independently. So one half of the string cumulologists work on the standard model, the other half works on stabilization of closed strings, and they simply assume that there is some sector somewhere. But at least in KK, so in type 2A, this might, no, even though in type 2A, this will be a problem too. But definitely in KKLT, this does not work, as has become clear now. Because whenever an instanton intersects, so to speak, the D-brain sector, it will not contribute to the modeling. Or in other words, it is at present a big challenge to stabilize those moduli controlling the size of your chiral brains, the brains which have chiral spectrum. This is a problem type 2A, where it will probably be related to free Witten anomalies, where if you have to invoke fluxes. And it's a big problem in type 2B, and it's also a problem, of course, then at the, or you name it, whenever. So I think this is probably what survives at present as a challenge. On the other hand, relatively little progress has been made in 3 years or so on understanding better the back reaction of the fluxes on the instance. This had been looked at from theory point of view, already by 2005, but I think it's fair to say that other than examples where it works, one does not have a clear picture at present. So these would be two interesting challenges to really tackle, maybe from a more systematic point of view. And they are very super important for phenology, because basically if we found out that chirality and stabilization of moduli are incompatible, this would of course be totally disastrous. So we need to find something.
Well, that sounds like we're going to hear some interesting lectures. So next topic I do have on my list is do you have any clue on type 2 and the nearest geometries in the context of type 2 theories? Which I guess Ruben is the expert in type 2 applications. So
I
guess we are going to hear about this.
If
you want to say
a few
words about.
Yeah, well, I'm not prepared at all, so I can actually right.
Short
warning.
I didn't talk to everybody.
Good. So there is a very simple sort of idea which underlines all this is everyone knows that it's easier to solve for supersymmetries or supersymmetry conditions than equations of motion. So then the next question is, can we cast them in good variables? So essentially, all there is about this generalized geometry is finding good variables in which you can write supersymmetric conservation. And rather than working with spinners, you realize that you can do it in terms of even or odd forms. So once you have done this step, there is an obvious and very sort of startling thing that you've noticed, is if you are in type 2B, so you have even or odd forms, which are made out of Navier-Schwarz fields. And their derivatives will be obviously odd or even forms accordingly. But Ramon-Ramon fluxes in given type 2A or type 2B are only odd or only even, which means if they are going to balance the Navier-Schwarz sector, only one of the two variables that you have is going to be correct. And there is an extra, and this would work in any dimension. I mean, once you just manage to do it, it will work from any dimension. There is a magic thing about internal dimension six, is that all there is about supersymmetry gets sort of packed into a pair of differential equations on this series of forms, which are either even or odd. And one of them is does not receive any feedback, any correction from Ramon-Ramon sector. So that's the sector which gives the name generalized Calabi-Yau. So the variable in question is called pure spinner, which is not related in any obvious way to the pure spinners that we were sort of talking about last week. But it's still, I mean, these are pure spinners of ODB groups, okay? And one of the pure spinners is always closed, and this is the one which sort of defines your generalized Calabi-Yau manifold. And the other gets corrections, and that's the one which is, in some ways, probably the more interesting one. So all there is about local equations of motion is essentially can be solved pretty systematically. And this way, you can also, in terms of these generalized Calabi-Yau structures, more or less classify all possible string compactifications. So the problem we have right now, it seems like that we have a full classification of nothing. So everything which is possible is classified, but there aren't many examples. There is an obvious example, which is ordinary Calabi-Yau is a generalized Calabi-Yau. So that's an example. And all the fluxes that you turn on are also described nicely. But if you, we also know very well that you need some kind of orientifold sources. So if you try to factor this in, orientifold compatibility of the formalism with orientifolds, essentially just dries out almost anything you could do. There are some examples. I mean, I can talk about examples. And I think the place where we have plenty of examples are the non-compact. So there, the formalism has been useful in sort of producing new things. In compact cases, twisted torus. So tomorrow there should be a paper on the net. So we were very proud for 2 years that we, there is a class of these twisted tori, which are 34 topologically distinct classes of manifolds. All of which admit general, all of which are generalized Calabi-Yaus. So in the beginning, we thought, we would get lots of examples. The net result was that all the examples we got were T-dual to Calabi-Yau with fluxes, to torus with fluxes. And then we got just one single example, which seemed to be more of a nuisance because, you know, why this one? Why is it there? And why does it work? And why isn't it related to any other model by any duality? All the rest are connected by t-dualities. So, as I said, tomorrow there will be a paper where we will argue that we found some kind of new duality which actually relates this model to other twisted tori, right? So there is a discrete family, so there is a notion of a family, but one needs to be a little more elastic about what one means by t-duality. That's what goes for examples. And another way is we are sort of trying also to accommodate the heterotic models into the formalism. And in some ways, this torsional background can be related by some duality to K3 times T2, which again, one needs to sort of go a little further than T1.
questions, or can I go?
This is a little like the G2 story, isn't it, where it's the most general framework but has no example. Like, it's probably not for the same reasons.
Well, G2 again, I mean, some of the type 2 stuff straightforwardly leads to G2. So these are the KK monopole type of things. Yeah, mm-hmm. And then again, you know that G2 with fluxes is possible. But it's hard to come up with non-trivial examples. So the best examples we have are the which go beyond the Calabi-Yau are these so-called balanced metrics, examples of which are either tori or K3 fibered over by a T2. So there is some uniformity in the examples that sort of appear. They appear both in O5, D5 kind of models in type 2 theories, and they also appear in heterotic models with T2 fibering a hyperkähler mix. So that seems like the nicest thing that one can do, which is sort of beyond Calabi-Yau.
But Joe, I would argue that for G2, for generalized Calabi-Yau, and also for heterotic flux models, we have the same technical problem, which is that we don't have a good construction of metrics. In the traditional Calabi-Yau case, including the heterotic case with no fluxes, we've got Yau's theorem, which tells us there are metrics, and we don't actually have to worry about what the metrics are. We can just do some rather elementary geometry and be guaranteed at the existence of a metric. And in the heterotic case, you also then need Hermitian-Einstein connection on the bundle, but that's also not a problem. There are theorems about that. And we don't have those techniques, so it's hard to get your hands on examples in all three of these directions for general equation.
This is I think it's the same situation like with the special Lagrange and Lagrange.
Yeah, same too, yeah. So I should mention that. Right.
So this is this. So I think maybe what mathematicians, I mean, maybe one of the things which one could try to do is like looking at larger spaces and then considering particular trajectories in the spaces which basically flow to these special points, and to understand. So that was basically the approach which people tried to do in the special Lagrange setup. Basically, you enrich the space, and then you try to understand if we can go step by step towards these examples without needing to know all the details about the geometry.
Right.
And I don't know if people did that So this I wanted to ask basically as a question. I don't know if people did that for these generalized.
Not yet, no, it's, I think for mathematicians the situation is almost as bad as for us. They probably would have a little more examples as far as compact geometries go, but then they don't need to worry about oriented world projection. So whatever they have as far as compactness goes gets killed by oriented world.
So, I mean, one approach which is exactly that kind of step-by-step approach that uses some kind of flow to get to the answer, which is pretty old, is Witten's gauge linear sigma model construction. And in these heterotic flux compactifications, there have been models made that don't try to start from the metric, but start from a GLSM type approach and kind of flow towards that. And I don't, has anybody really done that in a serious way in your case?
Well. No, I mean, all I know is the recent works by Melnikov and mm-hmm. friends. Yeah, mm-hmm. And again, there is some progress, but yeah, I cannot.
I think it's working. Yeah. Right.
It's
true that we don't have for the spaces something
like.
Right,
there you go.
Right. that we need something like Yau theorem so that we don't have to look at a metric, right? I mean, that's for some of the torsional spaces. I mean, that I like so much. So we don't have that, but there is still some sense in which we can sometimes talk about a metric and Calabi-Yau, for example, if we talk about a semi-flat approximation. I mean, that's what SYZ, for example, did. And there are some things that we can still do, even if we have to talk about a metric. And we can actually construct a large space of examples using this kind of approach. But it's true, we do not have yet something like Yau theorem that says, well, just C1 is equal to zero, and you don't have to look at a metric.
Aren't you eventually going to need more than just the bare existence statement anyway? I mean, for example,
Yeah.
Well, all right.
There is one problem which I have with heterotic strings.
Yes.
which I perceive as a challenge rather than a problem, it seems to me increasingly that sort of, if one wants to formalize it a little bit, I mean, there needs to be some kind of new formulation of it. So it's not really, I mean, the techniques of generalized geometry are very hard to apply to heterotic strings. The answer is obvious. H is not closed. Simply that. I mean, you can say this statement in as fancy way as you like. It's not a simple gerb, but it's a two gerb or whatever. No, but it's a,
you know what?
Yeah. So the idea is that most likely a sort of a new formulation is required, where one doesn't have to work for a, on an internal space, but on a space of the bundle over the internal space.
Well, maybe, yeah, but let's think about it in a simple way, right? So you have an action, for example, you have just take supergravity, right? And tangentials of heterotic strings, and you take the first upper prime correction, so we can write under the anti-identity. You have a definite set of equations you want to solve. You have supersymmetry constraints, the anti-identity, and the questions of motion. So you can ask a very concrete question, so to this equations with the first upper prime correction, can you find a solution or not, right? And the answer is, so there's a large question.
Perfectly fine, but if you want a systematic sort of formal progress, I think you need to find a place on which the thing is correctly formulated.
Okay, you can do it.
Yeah, but there are also issues of quantization, for example. What is quantized in heterotic backgrounds? I mean, we know something has to be quantized.
Yes.
And it's not clear, you know, you need to define or... As it's written, it's not very satisfactory. I understand it's a nice equation, h equals db plus alpha prime, but okay, you don't really like to work with quantities which are not closed.
Quantization is a problem with everything that's shown up on. I mean, when you turn on H flux, all hell breaks loose when you try to quantize your fluxes. So, I mean, that's not unique to heterotic.
No, not at all. But I mean, again, doesn't mean you don't want to understand it.
We really need a good formulation of this pattern. I mean, that go beyond saying that we're at anomaly. We need something as well as equal to zero and killer. I mean, that can be agreed.
So let me write down the items that I have left on my list so I can get to ask later on for suggestions. I'm sure that I missed topics that we can discuss about fluxes and inflation. So these are the two remaining topics that I found in the context of, oh no, I forgot one. So higher order effects of the work factor. So it gets to so I should have said that. So work factor effects. So what I would like to suggest is so maybe I can get you to say something about work factor effects. You have got a whole bunch of papers dealing with higher effects on the work factor. What are implications if you take a careful treatment of the work factor?
I am prepared. I think the status is that it's still not understood. Okay, so we know that the work factor arises from the reaction of the fluxes, but we don't know how. I mean, if we only want to discuss the like vacua or static solutions, there is formalism for that, like in general geometries. But once we want to understand what the dynamics in 4D, how things start moving, things like that, then I think it's a puzzle what's the role of the work factor. Like, because it's like a six-dimensional object, which in some, so it depends on the moduli that then you're stabilizing, and that has to be kind of put in these, integrals to compute, I don't know, 4D quantum. It's like a kind of a retrofitted problem. At least I have to say, I don't understand, what's the meaning of the work factor in four dimensions.
That sounds very philosophical. What's the meaning of the work factor?
Yeah, I mean, like, what does it do in the four-dimensional dynamics? Like, can we treat it as a 6D object that we are going to insert in our integrals to compute what happens in 4D? But it's not exactly that, because it's like I mean, yes, some hope for this comes again from dual gauge theories, where we understand a bit better, you know, the work factor is related to running on beta functions and things like that. So I would say, so what we know so far is that we know how to deal with the work factor if we only keep quadratic terms in the function that we know, and we still don't know what's the how the n equal to 1 theory will look like, so we don't know the Taylor potential, for example, and that's what we are trying to compute. So I would say it's safe, I mean, what we know, it's safe to ignore it as long as we are working with small number of places. And if not, it's hard to make, I mean, it's hard to make physical prediction in 4B, like, you know, like, these things can affect your cover couplings, mm-hmm. they can affect a lot of things, so. Mm-hmm. And they see precisely where this is rich phenomenologically, you know, these large hierarchies. So then, I mean, I think we cannot say how that is going to affect, you know, the 4B.
So that is actually also for like M3 and upper. I mean, you also have a work factor, right?
Yeah.
So in the predominance, would you also expect some?
Yeah.
And the longer difference back to the work factor here?
Yeah.
Okay, so are there any questions, or can I just call for the next points? So the next points are on my list are non-geometric fluxes, so I'm not sure somebody would like to talk or say a few things about non-geometric fluxes, Dan is mine. So.
That's really no warning, but so the biggest problem, well, one of the biggest problems with the field is that it's got a terrible non-geometric fluxes, it's really a terrible name, so I welcome the suggestions there. But basically the idea is, well, what I usually have in mind is just cases where you done some number of T values or something from spaces with H flux rather than S fluxes. So it's easy to sort of construct toy examples where after a couple of T dualities, you've got some fiber and you're patching it together over a base, but you're patching it together non-geometrically in the sense that your transition functions on the base are no longer just diffeomorphisms of the fiber combined maybe with gauge transformations of the B field, things like this. So if you believe in any solutions with H flux and you believe in dualities, I think you're sort of forced to confront these spaces, including constructions which aren't actually dual to the ordinary geometric ones, but can't be obtained just from dualities. And I think it would be great to understand how these things fit into the web of all the other things we've discussed so far, like the generalized Clavier constructions.
Do these have linear state model constructions? And are most linear state models geometric or non-geometric?
So I'm not really an expert there. I mean, there's, for instance, Chris Hull and collaborators have proposed this double torus formalism. So where you're sort of embedding it in a larger geometric space along mm-hmm. with some extra structure, which tells you how to pull out the physical, you know, the physical torus at a given point in the base, for instance. But there hasn't been a lot of work. One connection that I'd really like to see explored a bit more systematically is a lot of these constructions have points, have orbifold points where you've got an asymmetric orbifold. Those are points where we, you know, can actually write down a CFT or something like this and do a very more systematic expansion thing. And I'd like to understand how those sort of fit into the moduli space, if you like, of these more general constructions. I think I really have too much else to say.
Okay, so these are more or less the topics that I've listed here, and these are just topics that I kind of could come up with of people who are here. So in the future, there are kind of more people coming in, and there are, yes?
Nobody said anything about inflation.
You're right. So who did I list? Fluxes and inflation.
Was it you?
I'm not going to say
something. Oh, I'm talking to you. Oh, okay.
I mean,
In
various, flux compact application contexts, so the work I've done is in 2A flux compact applications. But anywhere where we've got sort of a map from a construction to an effective four-dimensional theory, immediately you want to start asking questions. Earlier we were talking about getting standard model gauge groups and things like this, but also, even if you're not worried at all and you're more from the say, moduli stabilization side of this divide we talked about, you might want to ask if the effective theory you get admits things like metastable considered vacua or regions which have slow roll inflation, from some of the moduli inflation, for instance. And when people have tried to look for those in sort of those setups, it's turned out to be a lot harder than you might have thought, just from the way things appear. And it turns out in a lot of cases there are actually no-go theorems. The tree level potentials you get in four dimensions just do not admit slow roll inflation or metastable considering. They're just always too steep in any regime where the potential is positive. There are exceptions, but basically it'd be nice to understand better why it's so hard, and find examples where it does actually work. I don't know if anybody else has any inflation related.
Well, I mean, I think inflation, I guess the basic idea, you could say, is that to go beyond just finding a vacuum and actually looking at the dynamical system. We're doing flux compactification to a system where there's a time dependence in the archer motor. And that's a huge complication, which often is very, very neglected and very approximate. But still, and then you can, it's still good to do approximations. And then the idea is to look at the, and there's another thing, so it's nice to reproduce a standard model and to work on one, on graph and so forth, but often the inflationary observable, which we are detecting today, are much more sensitive to higher scale physics, and particularly sensitive to gravity instead of just gauge theories. And so that's where string theory, of course, is. So, like non Gaussianity, tensor flows, or cosmic strings, all interesting observables, which eventually all the flux classification data and mechanism feeds into these things. So,
can I just ask, what is the status quo in this program?
The status quo of which part of the program?
I mean, can you go get something with inflation?
That was the starting point of doing a legitimate flux compactification where you correctly introduce time dependence. I mean, this is the starting point. I don't think it's very well understood with moduli stabilization. But
it's very hard to leave 14
times resolution. That's essentially what you're talking about. Yeah. You can find a vacua, but really, if you're doing a dynamical, then you should be away from the vacuum, and then just that is already. But then getting inflation is possible, although hard.
I can say possible.
Let's just say hard. But you can. It's fun. I think what a lot of the things that's been done is just bypass a little bit of the difficulty and look for interesting signals. Just so that.
So what's the favorite scenario? Isn't the side of brain versus moduli there?
Brain is...
I mean, there has been a lot of activity of P3 brains rolling down the other from Strassner.
Yeah, it's tractable.
Is that better?
No, I think that's...
These are nice.
They're just computable.
Well, Igor gave it that talk last Tuesday, in which it seems like that field has, according to him at least, focused on these inflection point potentials, which I don't think were discussed when in the original KK1T version they were main focus.
But then they, so what's the progress beyond this? There, the higher dimensional brains.
Right. So
And then there's the song speed model, so if you try to have higher derivative song speed, then both field model so going beyond.
I mean, the nice thing about D3 was it was easy to make the potential flat because you only had to worry about a little part of the manifold, whereas with higher dimensional frames, they wrap. But maybe that's naive. I mean,
I think the thing in D3 is not the potential flat.
Yeah, I mean, even with D3.
It's not really,
right.
I think the naive is not that the wrap isn't the non-flat potential, and the D3 also has a very long once that reaction.
Making local models is going to be challenging there too. I mean, because it's a kind of local effect in the manifold, but you've got fluxes that you've got to do something right. At some place, right?
Right.
And why that wouldn't cancel this effect, I don't understand.
Especially when you try to think of models that make tensor modes, EVA and her collaborators, I mean, her first models, the brain had to really sweep over the entire compact manifold.
Right.
Now it just sweeps many, many times around the little region. Yeah, we see tempo. Yeah.
Okay, can I ask, I was gonna ask for suggestions for logical strings.
Yeah,
logical strings. I missed logical strings, so I'll try that. Logical strings.
Logical stabilization
logical
strings. Yeah, I mean, it is like.
Well, I guess I listed just flats. That's why I didn't list them. It was okay.
But we did when we planned this program juxtapose these two subjects because we thought there were connections.
Wolfgang, are you telling us the connection?
No, just flats.
Okay, I can mention one thing that came up recently that is connected to something over there, which was, this might be phenomenologically relevant. So we were studying with Greg Moore and David DeGoto, we were studying recently the metrics that you get on hypermultiple moduli spaces. Actually, what we were listening was the rigid version of that. So we took the Coulomb branch of a four-dimensional gauge theory and reduced it to three dimensions. And then you get a hyperkeller manifold. And the question is, how can you describe the corrections to that hyperkeller manifold that come from instanton, the BPS states in four dimensions going around the circle? And one of the funny things that showed up in that calculation was it turns out that there are instanton corrections of the most naive sort that you would imagine. You have the BPS particle that goes around the circle. But there are also other corrections that you might not have expected, which are really multi-instanton contributions. And when I say multi-instanton, I mean, I really mean multi, it comes from a multi-particle state in four dimensions, not from a bound state. Two particles that are not even usually BPS, yet contribute simultaneously to the metric in three dimensions. So presumably things like that will also show up in the hypermultiple moduli space in four dimensions. Mm-hmm. Now I don't know. I think that not much is known about that question. And when I had a conversation with Timo, and we even concluded that this kind of multi-instanton was not the same kind of multi-instanton that you studied before.
Mm-hmm. So in the animal life context, it's always the multi-instantons are always mutually BPS objects. So what's really disturbing me. This mutual non-BPS property.
Okay, so I also find it puzzling. So that might be something that'll be of some phenomenological interest.
How concrete can you actually make this approach? If you, for example, want to compute, let's say, the quantum corrected version of the universal hypermultiple, can you do that?
No, I can't do anything in gravity today.
That's
certainly
a
longer
jump.
Absolutely, today I can only do, we can only do
cage. Any way of generalizing this?
There's a naive way of doing it, which is probably right for the instantons that we talked about so far. But the thing is, in gravity, there's one new instanton you have to deal with, which is if you go from four to three dimensions on the circle, you have to deal with the possibility that the whole four-dimensional space becomes top nut space instead of R3 times S1. So that's a really new instanton that you didn't have in gauge theory. It's in some sense the most interesting one, but we don't know today how to deal with its contributions. So.
Catherine, by the way, I think the universal hypermultiple only decouples semi-classically. So once you start to do quantum corrections, unless you're working with a model that has no other hypermetric.
Yeah, for example, type plane or reduced space. So that would be one of them.
But even that is probably not universal, right? I mean, even
that's true. Right. I mean, let's call it one-dimensional hyperbolic.
So it's type one energy. Is that being triggered by this discussion about this wall crossing?
Yeah. So it was in this exactly the same context.
I mean, it was not triggered by the instant on development. It's more like triggered by the black hole.
Yeah, it came from the other direction. We were trying to understand the BPS particles, which would be black holes in gravity, but just say BPS particles. But it turned out the best way of understanding them was to think of them as instantons in this lower dimensional theory. But it turned out the A way of understanding them was.
You want to add something to that,
Marco?
I won't let you escape.
I say topological strings. And flux that's erased. I mean, topological strings deep brains are much more interesting.
Yeah, that's what I think I was thinking. If you want to understand deep brains, at least sort of small radius and non-geometric models, I don't know how to do it. That's sort of, a topological string can sort of at least get a handle on that.
How about the special geometry approach you had for flux complications?
Flux was a trivial part.
But I thought you had kind of one common language for both, right?
Yeah, there's a common language which may be called N equal 1 special geometry, if you want to give it a name. In a sense, it mimics to some respect what is not N equal 2.
You mean mixed
obstruct? Yeah. But the flux part is the easy part because fluxes are essentially related to the bulk geometry, so all what depends on fluxes depends on the bulk model. But the Euclidean with the deep planes, and they have extra modular. They really bring a new structure. So in other words, what they say, let's put it this way: if you consider a superpotential, the functional complexity you get for this just from the fluxes is much less than what you would get if you have extra deep planes, because the deep planes supply new kinds of periods, theory periods, and more complicated functions. So the flux subsector is in a way always a trivial sector. Mm-hmm. And just in general, just to emphasize this, topological strings and deep brains is a subject which is by far not exploited. So it's really only the tip of an iceberg. Especially on compact. Well, let's add more as an advertisement. I think these things are important whenever you really want to do some computations. I mean, when I read phenomenological papers, I often see statements like, all we compute the superpotential, yes. And this is like a correlation function in discrete fields inserted, or some kind of intersection of some forms, and that's it. But for us, I mean, this would be the starting point, not the end point. So I'm saying that in most of these papers, nothing is really computed. Yeah? All the companies, it's true. People talk about instanton correlation, we have computed instanton. They usually write down expressions which are non-vanishing. Yeah? And then we have computed which are non-vanishing because of zero nodes or whatever. But all these things depend on moduli, open and closed to moduli in general. And there's almost no one really has been doing this computation.
Other than
to what models which are, of course, cheat. This is all
false. You're going to learn about this too then. Okay, so that's what I could come up with. So let me know if I'm still missing something. And apologies to everybody I pulled up. With short notice or with no notice, so that's all I wanted to say.